This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. This week, the U.S. military commander in Iraq and the American ambassador are in Washington giving their status reports on the war. And two separate congressional investigations are also releasing their findings. In other words, prepare for a solid week or more of nonstop news chatter about Iraq. But on today's show, we're looking at how fiction writers and artists have been reflecting the war back to us. Like the author Jane Smiley. Her latest novel, 10 Days in the Hills, revolves around a movie director who finds himself hosting an impromptu house party at his place in the hills above L.A. Unexpected guests start popping in, his ex-wife, his daughter, and the daughter's secret lover, who also happens to be Max's agent. Underlying all this personal agita is something much bigger. It's the first week of the invasion of Iraq. Those days of shock and awe.
Baghdad tonight, under heavy bombardment, on the day the war started.
But the Iraq War wasn't her only inspiration. Smiley's book is based on a 14th century work of fiction called The Decameron by Giovanni Boccaccio. I asked her how The Decameron helped get her on the path to writing 10 Days in the Hills.
Well, The Decameron was inspiring in a lot of ways, and I think the most basic one was that while I was reading The Decameron, we were having the anthrax scare. And The Decameron takes place during the Black Death. I think it was written in 1350. And yet, it's a very exuberant piece of literature. He's very aware of the Black Death, and that's the reason that the group of 10 leaves Florence. But when they do leave Florence, what they seek is pleasure rather than lamentation.
So to recap the Decameron, 10 people leave Florence during the Black Death, and this is written right after it.
Well, it's written right during it.
Yeah, during it, and they go off away from the fetid city to have fun mm-hmm. and make fun of the church, essentially.
Yes, and tell sexy stories.
Tell 100 sexy stories.
100 sexy stories. And in prose, for Boccaccio, that was very important, that they were in prose because it meant they were accessible to women. And that was part of his
really?
Desire, yeah.
Rather than poetry.
Right. He, at the beginning of the fourth book, he justifies writing in prose and pleasing women with erotic stories because he says women are worthy of pleasing. So, of course, I was flattered by that.
Your best-known novel, 1,000 Acres, which won the Pulitzer Prize, was also based on a classic work, Shakespeare's King Lear. Was the experience of writing these two novels comparable?
Yes, though when I rated King Lear for my own purposes, I did it for a different reason. I did it because I wanted to tell the female point of view. In this case, I came to feel that the Decameron sort of depicted the pivot between the medieval period and the modern period.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost can't help think that we are living through the pivot between the modern period and whatever is to come.
The new medieval period.
I hope not, but maybe. And so the result of that, of thinking that, was that I wanted to be the one who did the depiction mm-hmm. of this pivot on the hope that, you know, this book, every author wants their book to survive. So if my book were to survive for 653 years, I would hope that somebody like me would read that book and look back and say, gosh, that was what it must have been like back there in 2003.
10 Days in the Hill is not a novel about this war, but the war occupies the thoughts and conversations of your characters a lot.
Yes.
I understand you had planned to write a novel, a sexy novel about Hollywood, before the war was even
yes.
A glimmer in anybody's eye. How soon after the invasion happened did you decide that Iraq would figure so prominently as the backdrop?
I think it was while after I read Boccaccio and I was inspired by that. That seemed to me, that book said to me, okay, this is your form, and this is what's going to shape your subject. So I would have to say that it all came together kind of simultaneously in my mind, using the Boccaccio, placing it during the war, and having it be set in Hollywood. It's kind of a bingo moment where you say, oh, I know how to do that.
And just as the Decameron was this ribald, sensualist feast set against the Black Death, did you like the idea of sort of this glammy fabulousness and lounging by the pool set against the idea of sending troops and bombers and missiles into Iraq?
Well, from an artistic point of view, setting sex up against death and war is always a striking contrast, let's put it that way. But from a personal point of view, when you are worried about, let's say, whether your family is going to be wiped out by the plague, to then construct what Boccaccio did construct with the Decameron, it's very inspiring. It's as if human beings, no matter what kind of a disaster is happening to them, cannot help being life-affirming because
right.
they're alive.
Right.
And that was what I loved the very most about the Boccaccio, that the idea that the Black Death is an absolute model of what we don't want to happen to us, a model of a catastrophe, a model of a world-changing bad event. And yet, what are they doing? They're not weeping. They're telling funny stories. So there's a way in which that is very inspiring and motivating for me.
To stay alive no matter how bad it gets out there?
Yes, and you're not staying alive in a miserable way. You're staying alive in a hopeful way.
Right, in which lots of sex takes place. You had a lot of sex in your last novel, actually, Good Faith.
Oh, do you remember that?
Yes, indeed. But now you've upped the ante and really gotten people's attention. I want to quote John Updike in his review your book in The New Yorker, in which he says, "The sexual descriptions set a new mark for explicitness in a work of non-pornographic intent."
Now, that is going to be the first line of my obituary in the New York Times, no matter how long it takes me to die from this point.
Well, that's
and
good.
No matter what I do.
It'll make you seem cool and sexy as a 90-year-old.
Well, I'm sure it will. I mean, to have that line in a review by Updike of me is basically very funny.
You mean the pot calling the kettle black?
Yeah. But it's also a testament sort of to what I wanted to do. And I did want to write about sex, but I did want to write it in a novelistic way rather than a pornographic way.
Uh-huh.
And the way that I would define that is I don't want the person who's reading the novel to stop while they're reading the sexual passages. I want them to be so interested in the characters that they just keep on going.
What about the craft of it, though? There is in literature, especially the last 50 years, you know, quite a bit of explicit sex, and most of it is so awful. And you want to skip it not to get to the plot because it's just so terribly done. Did you find it hard to do? Did you have to figure out, you know, how clinical to be versus how poetic in the language? How did you do it?
Well, I remember when I was setting out to write the book, now that's about almost exactly 2 years ago, I remember saying to myself, well, how am I going to do the sex? You know, I'd had all these plans, and now I was faced with the technique. And I remember explicitly saying to myself, well, I'm going to novelize sex rather than sexualize the novel. So that was my explicit plan.
Uh-huh. Was it fun? Was it gratifying to do?
The novel was more gratifying and fun than the sex.
Yeah?
I mean, the novel as a whole, because, you know, I came to really like these characters, and I came to like them all the time when they were eating and telling stories and making mistakes and weeping and doing all the things that they do. So it's all kind of examples of who they are to me, and the sex isn't anything special. It's just there.
As you were writing this book rather long after the war was underway, did you do any kind of research to go back and get yourself in the head of those early days, which was a very different zeitgeist than later? Yeah.
Oh, sure. I read every day's edition of the L.A. Times.
Back then, March and April of 2003.
Yeah, every day of those days. I read them online. And that was illuminating because guess what? It wasn't all that different from subsequent periods. The people who adhere to the arguments for and against the war may have shifted in the balance in the population, but the arguments have remained basically the same.
As a storyteller, are you envious of things that filmmakers can do in movies that you can't do in a novel?
No.
No?
You know, I'm not a very visual person. I love movies, but I love novels more. And what I think novels give all readers, but especially readers who love novels, is an incredible complexity.
Mm-hmm.
So you can hope that a viewer will see the complexity of the visual picture in your movie, but you can't do anything to direct their gaze at that, except the most, you know, broad things like camera angles and stuff like that. But a novel must direct the reader's gaze, and so the novelist has tools at her disposal that the movie maker doesn't have, even while the movie maker has tools at his disposal that the novelist doesn't have. And I love the novelist's tools, and I love the result.
Jane Smiley, thank you very much for joining me in Studio 360.
Oh, sure. It was my pleasure.
10 Days in the Hills is now out in paperback.